get any answers. Thinking that your dead air won't kill, but you're right, the nights will always slowly break me down with madness. Round and round the brain goes, slowly sinking deep into the ghost. Now you're too late, it's much too late.
Greetings and salutations once again for this episode 140 of Progtopia. If you don't already, please follow us on Facebook. You can find the Progtopia page pretty easily. We also have a Progtopia group page that you might want to be a part of. If you have projects that you want to share with people in the group, you're more than welcome to do that, as long as you don't spam us. That'll get you the banhammer. Okay, and also, before I forget, you can go to progtopia.com and find all of our past episodes on there. Just click the archival episodes tab or the backstage pass tab or the Progtopia planetary premieres tab. There's a whole bunch of stuff to listen to there. All right, but this time for the show, I've got a new duo that is making their first appearance on the program. And I'm speaking of drummer Mark Zonder and guitarist, keyboardist, and singer Gary Werkamp. These guys you might know from other bands. Zonder has been with Fate's Warning and Warlord, and Werkamp has been with Shadow Gallery. So you may be familiar with their work there. These guys, though, have been collaborators for quite some time, and they decided, with a little bit of a push from a label that actually didn't wind up releasing this album, to do a duo album together. And they handle just about every single thing that you hear on this album. It was released back in May, and it is called If It's Real. I would say the predominating vibe is different from what you might expect if you're familiar with the output of those bands I just mentioned or anything else that these two have been a part of. This is sort of down a kind of a Pink Floyd rabbit hole, like a more melodic kind of a take, not so much the shredding, you know, the double bass kick and that sort of thing, which is some of what we talked about in this interview that you're about to hear. But nonetheless, I think it's really just quite an emotional work for many reasons. So you're going to hear a lot in this interview coming up about the lyrics, about how they collaborate, about just how maybe they could even get this to be played live, and many other things. We cover a lot of topics, so I hope you'll stay tuned here. We'll play one full track and, you know, a little bit of music here and there from the album. Once again, it's called If It's Real. And, yeah, here we go. Mark Zonder, Gary Werkamp, everybody. Musical partners and, you know, that sort of thing. You've collaborated in some form over the years, as far as I can tell, as far as songwriting goes. So What was the genesis of this whole Zonderwerkamp band collaboration? Who had the idea?
Mark, you want to take this?
Sure, yeah. Well, as you said, Gary and I had probably been working together 20 years. I definitely remember the exact phone call that I had with Mike Varney sitting in Locust Valley, New York, when we moved there, calling him up and saying, hey, I'm looking for a songwriting partner. I want to do some stuff. And he hooked me up with Gary. And actually, Gary does have a funny story on how the whole same thing happened, because kind of Varney was playing both sides of the fence on this one. That Gary will explain that in a minute. But anyway, so we've written a gazillion songs. We've written, with other singers. We've tried a million different guys. We were actually on this whole project looking for an actual singer. So we'd bring like a different element into it. And after 19 years, Gary and I kind of just looked at each other and went, this is ridiculous with all these singers, big name singers, no name singers, guys that were really good that turned in one song and then, we couldn't find them. And, guys that were like overly invested and they loved it and they loved it and they loved it. And then they just kind of went on holiday for like 3 years. And we just got to that point. We couldn't get anything going. We have the 80 songs or whatever. You name it, we've got it. And it's kind of even an interesting story. Gary came out when we were in San Diego and they recorded the drums for the Shadow Gallery. One of the Shadow Gallery albums at my studio, well, it was my house, but in the garage, whatever. And Gary was like leaving on the Sunday and he had like an hour. So we went in the studio and I think Gary, what was it, like seven ideas? It was ridiculous.
We recorded probably six or seven portions of songs. Like we pretty much could have written an album. If we had 2 hours, we could have written a record.
Wow. Yeah, and been done. This particular one came about where we had, we just keep writing and writing and writing, and we've written a couple songs. There was a label out there that wanted to jump on the Pink Floyd, Steve Wilson, Porcupine Tree, kind of depressing, dark kind of sound. Right. Now, they weren't looking for heavy metal. They weren't looking for up-tempo. And we said, okay, great. And so we just kind of went along that line. And then when we were done with the record, they basically said, oh, no, we changed our mind. We're not going to go that direction. So we were kind of sitting here. And that's how this whole thing came about. And we just said, this is too good not to put it out. So we just decided to put it out ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Now, Gary, you got a story in there. Did he cover that? Or is there more to this that he sort of hinted at?
Mark? I saw Mark's name on a lot of the records that I was also playing on in the early Magna Carta days, like all of the tribute albums and stuff. But, mm-hmm. I didn't really know much about him or Fate's Warning, except for knowing who they were. But my memory was that I was in Vegas with my wife, and I had to do this record called The Explorers Club. And it was a lot of negotiating back and forth between Magna Carta and myself. And I agreed to not do it because I didn't like the way the negotiations were coming. And so they actually asked Kerry Livgren, the original guy in Kansas who wrote all those great songs, to play it. And I guess, I've never told the story, but to this degree, but he actually recorded it. And when he was done, they didn't want to use it. So they went back to me and said, can you please do this? But we need it, as soon as possible. Or sooner, And I was in Vegas and they called me. And as it turns out, my wife got very sick, and we ended up in the hospital the day I was going to fly home, and she had her appendix removed. And I think Varney called me and said, hey, where's this record? And I said, well, I told you I was going to do it Monday, but I'm actually stuck in Vegas. And he kind of read me the riot act, like going, hey, we gave you this opportunity, we need this record now, what the hell's your problem? And I kind of unleashed on him and said, hey, I'm in the hospital every night with my wife, and I don't need to hear this shit from you right now.
Yeah.
And, of course, he settled down and said, sorry to hear that, and when can we expect the record done? And when it was all said and done, I said, you owe me a favor. Start hooking me up with different people. That you owe me a musical favor. And then Mark Zahner called me, and so I think that was Mike Varney's way of repaying me for being rude.
That might basically, it fell into his lap where it's not like he had to dig deep. Here he has a drummer guy in New York saying, hey, man, get me somebody. And then Gary saying, hey, man, get me somebody.
That's right. He's still in your favor.
Exactly. Really. Don't tell me that isn't about as easy as it goes for a guy to hook something up. That fell with his
life, right?
You're a little easy there, Mark. Yeah, okay. Got it. All right. We all know now. Yeah, so, people who know you, and you've kind of alluded to some of the bands that you've been involved with, throughout your career, You know, Shadow Gallery, Fate's Warning, etc., those kind of pedigrees. This album, you know, if it's real, is definitely not that sort of music or what casual listeners might expect. You know, kind of talking about that too. Did you have any concerns about, you know, people who follow those bands, you know, what they might think about this album's tone once it was out?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And the funny part of it was, you know, we joked about it, but now as it's rolling out, maybe we should have done this, you know, maybe we should have said it was two other guys, because I really think, and we all know how music, diehard music fans are.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'm the same way. I remember when Rush came out with Grace Under Pressure, I kind of went, ooh, what's going on here? And as it turns out, it's probably one of my favorite albums.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just like the one that I always go to. But the initial shock, and I'm glad I got over, but I know a lot of guys listen to it once and go, man, this is a piece of crap. You know, where's that double bass? Where's that screaming guitar solo? I don't hear that guy wailing like, you know, his balls are in a blender. You know, where is it? I'm looking for this. You know, wait a minute. Where's all the odd time? You know, where's all the syncopated funky stuff? So I thought it would have been interesting if we would have came out of like we were just like Ricky and Johnny from down the street, you know, a couple 27-year-old kids that couple 20, you know, do a whole kind of NSYNC thing, you know, or a whole Backstreet Boys or Milli Vanilli, whatever.
I was gonna say it's a Robin Fab sort of deal here, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, make it completely different to the point of view where they're not tying it. Because I'd rather not be tied to all that when you're coming out with a different kind of record. Now there's guys and fans that are true music fans that go, hey, it's good, period. I don't care if it's bubblegum pop. I don't care what it is. Mm-hmm. Good is good.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's other guys that you know, and I've seen a couple of reviews, and, you know, that guys just don't get it. There's more to life, you know, than Odd Time and Up-Tempo and all that kind of stuff. So, yes, we were very aware of, you know, that kind of situation that might happen.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the strengths that Mark has, and maybe myself, is that we're able to be versatile and, you know, change it up. We're not really stuck in one genre. And if you heard our entire catalog, and maybe one day you will, hopefully, you would say there's no way. It's just the same two guys, right?
Well, I know enough, yeah. So that, yeah, it's a little bit of a surprise, but not an unpleasant one. So, I you know, I want to make that clear, too. So.
Well, that's good. You know, it is what it is. And, you know, we knew it's not what we're known for. But, you know, I think the music has to speak for itself. And, you know, if you want more double bass or longer guitar solos, well, you got that from other records. This record is not about that.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Do you know if you've picked up any new listeners along the way? Because this is, you know, a more melodic, dare I say, accessible style that, you know, might appeal to them more than, you know, this stuff with the guy with his balls in a vice singing.
Well, the problem that we're kind of running into is the, you know, the downfall of the quote music business.
Oh,
so,
of course, yeah.
Yeah, yes, it's great, you know, and I love hearing everybody 20 years old talk about, oh, this is so great, and, you know, we can all do records, and we can all be in bands, and we can all put stuff out, and blah, 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 you know, and all that, and that's really cute, but what we ran into, and we ran into it like a brick wall, was the first question that any label had was, well, how many did your last record sell?
Yep.
Well, there is no last record. Well, you want to count up all the Fate's Warning, Warlord, Shadow Gallery, and everything else Gary and I have played on over the years? Probably over, I would say, maybe getting about half or 1.5 million, maybe, mm-hmm. if not more.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, easily. I mean, just start adding it up if you want to. But yeah, I don't know what we're gathering along the way because, you know, we don't have label support. We don't have an endless bankroll to hire independent promotion. We're doing the best we can to, quote, get it out. But it's not like a record that's on a label that, boom, hey, that first week we're number three on the Swedish charts and mm-hmm. all this other kind of stuff. I mean, we just don't have the firepower, you know. Mm-hmm. I would love to say that there's a $500,000 campaign that's behind it, but it's not. I mean, all the recordings, all the videos, everything was done in-house.
Yeah. Not many get that anymore, so, you know, it's not like you're swimming against the tide. The tide is kind of taking all these people along, it seems like, from when people that I interview, it seems like a lot of that, especially when they release independently. But, you know, there's some freedom with that, I suppose, that you don't have, you know, the bigwigs saying, you know, do something different for the next album, or, you know, those kind of things. So
we did something different for the first album,
right? Yeah,
exactly.
Get that out of the way.
Exactly. Yeah, I think at this point, especially at this point in our careers and what we've done, you know, there's a certain bankability that someone knows what they're going to get when certain names are involved, and all you have to really do is listen to it. And I just think that any kind of label is, it's all about numbers right now. There is no development. We all know that. Mm. It's just about, okay, how many can we sell right out of the box? Because we know, you know, I mean, look at the labels that are doing stuff, you know, every week they're putting out 20 different records. It's kind of going back to that Metal Blade philosophy, you know, and God bless Brian Slagle, you know, in the early 80s, 70s, or whenever he was doing all that stuff. Hey, I'm going to put out 50 records. You know, if one kind of sticks, we're good to go.
Sure.
You know, so
definitely.
Quantity. And you know, there, you know, I was involved in a gazillion of those early records, doing a lot of drum tuning on those records. And they weren't big budgets. And they were just kind of like, okay, let's just get this done and get it out. Get it done and get it out. Get it done and get it out. And then you have compilation albums that you're going to reissue. And then we're going to do this. And we're going to do that. It was just, it was all business. And it just seems today it kind of went back to that. And even the quote, you know, rock labels and prog labels and all that kind of stuff are so scared and so worried about money that, and it's funny because Gary and I weren't even looking for money. It was more about getting it out, you know, and getting, having it exposed. And it's really tough, you know. I mean, you know, let's face it, you know, the internet is only good for so much.
The endless videos.
So you two are handling all the musical duties. Are there any others involved anywhere on this?
No, not really. I don't think so. I mean, Brian Allman from Shadow Gallery played a little bit of guitar, some rhythm guitar on something on the song I'd Do Anything, just because I wanted a clean tone, and he's got great sounds. But I don't think there's anyone else involved other than our kids' voices here and there, right?
They come cheap.
No, absolutely. It was it was interesting between our two studios, kind of did the whole thing, and then Gary, you know, mixed it and you know, spent hours and hours, and really, you know, that's one thing I have to say, and it kind of pains me to give him a compliment, but the mix, especially when you really listen, I would have to say without a doubt the best drum sound that I've had, you know, the one that I'm most proud of, you know. So I'll be honest with you too, though, a little bit of that has to do with, it's not a lot of heavy guitar on this, and we all know how difficult heavy guitar and snare drums and bass drums, they don't like getting along with each other.
I think Mark started to cut you off. I mean, your drum sounds great because you recorded it great, so you get the credit for the way it sounds. I just tweaked it, but there's a lot of room and a lot of space, so you can hear everything all the time, which I love, you know.
Mm-hmm. It's very, to me, when you put those headphones on, especially, it's a very live record, and I can hear things in there that I go, oh, this is like, and I hate to use that word organic, but it's organic, and it's guys playing, and you can hear a little push and shove, and, you know, you can hear these different things, and you know it's an actual record. And it's, you know, I think it's amazing. I mean, even just when I sit and listen to it sonically, it really, you know, kind of gets me going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I always tell people, please don't listen on your, you know, tinny speaker on your iPhone. You're not going to get the effect of any kind of music, regardless of stuff that you really should listen to like this. But yeah, I'm always a headphone guy. So, you know, it just opens up, and it is very clean sounding, like you say. So.
I hear it as a very sparse, open, and simple record, but there's also just layered in there tons of details on.
Yeah, I was going to say,
Mark's end and my end.
Yeah, it's not a loud record. It doesn't hit you over the head, but there's plenty going on. Like you'll hear those details for sure if you're paying attention. Right. Yeah.
The one thing that really trips me out a lot of times when every time I listen to it, I hear like different melody lines in the background. You know, I hear different counterpoints to each other in the background. You know, that kind of thing. So it's I think it's overly thick. I would not want to be a cover band that says, okay, we're going to play this. you know what I mean? It's like, and I just know from Gary, you know, the 78 keyboard tracks or whatever the hell's going on. And, you know, no, it's deep and thick. And that's what it always cracks me up when people go, you know, it just sounds so simple. I go, well, listen to it. And you tell me if you think that's simple.
Yeah.
No.
I think it's both.
I hear the simplicity and then I hear the layers, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think a lot of the simplicity is in the arrangement. I think a lot of the simplicity is in the strong melodies. It's, you catch right onto it right off the bat. It's not like one of these things where it's odd time or it's kind of like moving all over the place and you don't know where the hell you're at. It's there is a very strong pop sensibility to this whole record as far as how it's put together. There's a lot of these, you know, pop kind of, hey, third verse, let's drop everything out, you know, let's do this here, let's go for the old less is more kind of thing, and then we'll come back in kind of thunderous and you know, those kind of production tricks. So I don't know. I just put it on and it never disappoints me. Let's just put it that way.
Well, that's good. If you get disappointed in your own music, we're in trouble.
Oh, I've been down that road.
Well, at least not with this one. Good. Mark, I've been watching your video series that you've been putting up, well, on your Facebook page, but YouTube, about your part in the making of the album. I was interested to hear that there are no overdubs involved. So can you tell us, you know, who aren't as technically inclined on a drum kit, how do you go about achieving that?
Well, a lot of that stuff is... I'm using the electronic pads with the acoustic drums while I'm playing. Mm-hmm. So I come up with the various parts or think of different ideas as a whole, not like, hey, I'm going to go back and I'll put this in afterwards and I'll put that in. I'm trying to come up with a completed groove or a part by myself. Now, a lot of that was recorded and then on individual tracks, and then I'd go back and then like the pad that I was hitting at was like, let's say the shaker, you know, maybe I'd put a delay on that, or I would put like a slightest flanger. I kind of did a pre-mix, so I got the things exactly set the way I wanted to. You know, a lot of the panning too, if you listen to this, it's a serious stereo record as far as that goes. Mm-hmm. So it's just a combination of using the pads and the trigger pads as I'm playing. You know, they're right there in front of me. It's just, you know, and I've been doing that for years. I mean, that goes back to the mid-80s when I was playing with the guys and girls from Animotion. And I just learned how all about the electronic stuff. And the Fate's Warning, it's all over those records. You know, the 11th Hour, Life in Still Water, I was bringing the electronics into the whole thing. And it was just hitting pads that I had set up in samplers and stuff like that. You know, another thing that I do on this record a lot, too, is I use a program in the computer where I played the kick drum, let's say, but I want to blend it in with, like, an 808 kick, or I want to change the sound. It's not like, you know, the old days were like, okay, well, for this part, I need to use the piccolo snare. Well, this part, I need to use the marching drum snare. Well, this day and age, you just play the regular snare that you like, and then I can just trigger a sample in certain parts where I want it to be different sounding. Mm-hmm. So it's just like crafting a record is all it really is. You know, it's like things that I hear and that I want to hear. And, you know, it would take me years and years, like, to sit here and try to convey those to, like, Gary, on this one, can you make it a little bigger, you know, or a little, you know, fatter? And, you know, I just like doing that stuff myself. I've been doing it for years, and it was great on this record that I was able to really do it and do what I wanted to do. Which leads me to another little quick story. I did two songs on the Arch Matthäus record, and one of the songs had this, like, total breakdown part, and it was, like, the original demo they had was, like, bells and cymbals and all that kind of cute stuff. I said, well, you know, I'm going to put together an electronic part. And I put down this whole thing, and it was really cool. You know, it was completely, you know, Peter Gabriel, Pink Floyd, whatever you want to call it. And they didn't want that. And so it was like, okay, that got scratched, but they went, we went back with the bells and all that kind of cute stuff. And that was fine. But I'm going to use that obviously in something we do probably down the line. But I'm just saying it was good in this band where I could do whatever I wanted and not have things, you know, and just be as creative as I wanted to be. Oh, I want this thing shimmering in the background, left to right, like right to left or whatever. So that's just part of the whole production. That's why I think when you get done listening to this, you go, wow, that's two guys. Yeah. You know, it's not two guys and a bunch of studio dudes. It's two guys, period.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember anyway. I mean, Steely Dan, you know, God bless, was two guys, but then a bunch of studio dudes.
Right, sure.
You know, I don't really know anything off the top of my head that qualifies for this. And it was kind of interesting because when we were talking to labels, I said, I think it would be kind of an interesting marketing thing where it's two guys, you know, doing all this. And needless to say, they weren't impressed with that, so we moved on.
Maybe it was two different guys. I don't know. It's just
good point. Good point. But that's just trying to be creative. It just really comes out of that. Let's be creative and go be creative.
Yeah, sure. So lyrically, I'm not sure who's handling the lyric duties or if it's split or whatever. Where are you taking listeners on this album?
That would be Gary. Loomy
boys.
All right. Well, Mark talked enough, so it's your turn.
Yeah, exactly.
It's definitely a dark journey, but it's definitely also, you know, it's a journey. It starts off, you know, kind of heading downhill, but by the end, you're heading back uphill again, hopefully. And, you know, two late additions to the album were the last two songs. And I just felt they were necessary to kind of bring the listener back, you know, because we don't want to depress people, but, you know, there's some definitely, you know, times in your life where you're challenged, and this record hits on those times. But you know, in the end, it's all right. You know, you're gonna climb back from it, and that's kind of the message I think we want to say.
Yeah,
The last song, I thought of it, and I was like, you know, I get my best ideas when I'm just getting out of the shower, and, you know. And I was like, I heard somebody interviewing me and going, well, what's this record about besides saying if it's real? What's it about if you had to say one message to somebody? And I just said, well, if you had to sum it up in like 5 to 10 words, I'd say, you know, it's okay if you're down, it's not the end. And so that became the last chorus and the last thing we wrote. But that's towards the end of the journey going, you know, you got to cycle back and, you know, face it all again, on a new day.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, you guys aren't necessarily familiar with the show, but I had shared recently about some mental health struggles that, some members of my family had been going through. And I think maybe that's why, you know, this album sort of caught my ear a little bit. Just that, you know, there's some people that are very close to me that have had those inner voices just kind of trying to drag them down like that. So I don't know if that's something that either or even both of you have experienced on a personal level. And that's, you know, kind of comes into whenever you're doing the lyrics and even the music of it all.
Well, it's kind of interesting. Well, and I don't think it was planned, but there's a little backstory that's kind of interesting to this that we didn't really bring out. But I'll share it anyways. What's it been, Gary? Like 3 years? Your house burned down.
Yeah, about 3 years.
Hmm.
So Gary had his whole house completely burned down to the ground.
Oh.
And just this last November, we got blown out of our house in L.A., and we're still not back in it. We probably won't be back in it for 9 months to a year. Hmm. So it's kind of interesting how that kind of is another similarity that we have together. Gary's got a son. I've got twins that they're all about the same age. And that's why I love that song, Where Are the Children Going? Because it's very poignant to what's happening today and how kids are all tied up and, you know, all the modern, conveniences or electronics or whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. But, there's kind of a common thing going on. And, you know, I thought the lyrics were great. I thought it was very fitting. I think the album is just very strong all the way around. Where can I go when I'm all alone?
right. Well, I want to give the gearheads something here, Gary. So what's your rig like at the moment? Occasionally people want to hear that sort of thing, especially when it comes to the guitarists. So what do you got going on?
You know what? It's a pathetic answer. I just kind of, whatever lands in my lap, that's been my entire life. You know what I mean? Like, I don't go out and buy anything. I'm like the least likely person you ever meet that's going to say I'm saving my money for this or whatever. Uh-huh. You know, I'm using the same keyboard I bought when I was 22, which is an Insonic DS12.
Okay.
And you know, like everybody I know around here makes fun of me. I've owned six of them over the years. I can't seem to get away from it. I'll use soft synths and whatever inside my computer program for different sounds. Guitar-wise, literally, I was when I was going to shoot the video, the second video we put out, the director and I were talking about maybe, like, I always wanted to have a scene of me on a mountaintop with a helicopter flying, shooting a guitar solo. And I said, can you make that work? And he found a way to make it work. And he said, it'd be better if you were all in white. And I said, well, then I should probably have white gloves. And what about a tuxedo and a white guitar? Let's make everything white. But I didn't own a white guitar. And this was right around the time I lost actually my entire guitar collection in the fire. So I called a friend and said, hey, you know, can I borrow your white guitar? And he said, yes, but he just had his initials put really big across the whole guitar. And he said, you know what? He goes, I buy guitars all the time. He goes, just pick out a guitar you want and we'll check it out. I'll buy it for you. And if you like it, you can keep it. If not, I'll buy it or return it. Good friend.
Wow.
And I was on my way to a gig in New York and I literally said, Siri, you know, find me a white guitar. And the first web page that came up, I scrolled through and didn't even look. I just clicked on the first white guitar that came up, and it was this Schecter. I didn't even know the brand of it. And I sent my friend the link. He bought it for me, and I ended up playing it and loved it. And it's like the only guitar I play now. Wow. So the video kind of inspired the rest of the album that I used that guitar on it. But it's a white Schecter. I don't even know what model, but other than that, you know, I use whatever's closest. You know, I'll grab the closest guitar and just use that. And you know, I will say one thing more than the gear itself is the approach. Like, you can give me a banjo and I can't play it, but I'll find some way to create on it. But with the guitar, this is a kind of off the point here, sorry, but
that's all right.
Like, for a lot of this record, I tried to find a way to record my first idea and keep it, you know. And you know, it's Mark and I, we've been around the block so many times, like, we know what it's like when you're going to sit down and play a basic drum beat, or you're going to just grab a guitar and play your basic chords. So for me to kind of re-inspire myself, before I would start, I'd listen to, maybe Mark would send me a drum track, and I'd be like, okay, I'm going to write to this one. I really am inspired by what he's playing here. But I don't want to know what I'm going to play. And, like, my biggest strength is that my ear is pretty strong. I know what the guitar sounds like before I pick it up. Like, wherever I'm going to put my hands, I know what it's going to sound like. So I would detune the strings randomly to anything. I mean, they would be in tune with each other, but they would be not at all in tune to, you know, the way you would put your hands. And that way, when I put my hands someplace, I had no idea what it was going to sound like. And I found that far more inspiring. And that's actually how I wrote a lot of the parts for the record. And it's funny, because when we started shooting the videos for, like, the next big thing, that acoustic intro, like, I have no idea how to play that. I can't even figure it out. But, like, the people that were filming were laughing, going, how do you not know your own song? And I'm like, I have no idea how to play this. But but it really, it served its purpose in that it gave me, you know, fresh ideas right away. You know, so I'm going to noodle around for hours and hours and hours till I find something cool. I want it to sound inspiring right away. So that was my approach.
That's cool. I mean, there's something to be said for that. Like, don't overthink it and just, you know, go with what you got. And, you know, that'll take you a long way. You know, you got a whole record out of it doing it that way, and it sounds like that.
Well, I mean, I wanted to feel like I was, you know, 10 again. When I was 10 or like 13, say, playing the guitar, everything was new and exciting, no matter what you did. And, you know, I'm just not interested in recreating anything. I just want to create new all the time. And to me, it's no fun to play something I've played before. And so you got to find new ways to make it work.
Yeah, totally. Can you, I mean, you just said that there's a part in there that you weren't sure how to play anymore, but can you get out live with this music, or do you have plans to do that?
We can. Yeah, we definitely can. I mean, we'd probably have to add another person or two, and maybe we might bring a computer to fill in some of the gaps. But we don't have definite plans, but it's an exciting idea, you know. So I think when the time is right, I think if the record takes off and people want to hear it, then we're going to start looking more seriously into saying, okay, we want to bring it to you.
Yeah,
because it can technically go from Gary and I in a computer to Gary and I in a 4 to 5, 6 piece band.
Mm-hmm.
So depends, you know, what the money's like, obviously, because, you know, to put people on stage, you know, rehearse them, especially stuff like this, you know, it's going to cost some money. It's not like, hey, let's go play a bunch of AC/DC covers at the Whiskey tonight. It's kind of, it's a process. It's going to take some time, because the last thing you want to do is go out and butcher this.
Yeah, sure.
So, yeah, you know, which we wouldn't do, but, yeah, it really depends on, you know, what happens offer wise and, you know, realisticness of what we can do.
Mm-hmm. Well, then at least.
Go ahead. But the answer to the question, I think, is we'd love to, is what the real answer to the question is. We'd love to.
I'm sure, you know, more people can hear it that way. I guess then I'd like to know at least what are the chances of, you know, this ZW band being a continuing thing?
I think
100%.
I mean, we've been doing it for quite a while, and you know, I mean, this tone of the record is obviously, you know, unique to what we've been writing and recording over the last many years. But you know, I don't know if it would be the same gloominess lyrically. I can't see myself staying in this band. I can't stay here anymore. But I think, you know, musically and creatively, I think Mark and I we work well together, and so, yeah, I'm ready to hit the next record right away.
Absolutely.
Okay. I was going to say it would be really awkward if one of you wanted to do it and the other one was like, well, you know, I got this going on. And it's, I'm not sure if I can make time.
Let's just let it go, yeah.
One full track as promised. I think this is probably my favorite. They had mentioned it after we had gotten done with our formal talk, and when I asked them what song they might want to have played, they said this one. So here it is. The next big thing.
Thank you.
People are going to want to know, if they don't have it already, how they can find you online and get this album if it's real.
Well, it's anywhere on social media, like, you know, iTunes, Amazon, you know, anywhere you would expect to find any music. Hopefully you'll find this. I haven't checked myself, but it should be all those places. You can also find it on our webpage, ZW Band, or is it on our webcam? I'm not sure.
Yeah.
CD Baby, iTunes.
Has it.
Follow them on Facebook. And, you know, all that. Check out those videos. You got some videos out there too for a few of the songs. Three now?
Yeah.
Is it three? Or I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, we've got three full production videos and a series of other things.
Right.
And we have more coming out as well. So
yeah.
Check out our Facebook page. You can up to date.
I would definitely recommend to the serious music fan and listener that they get the physical hard copy, whether it's from our website or CD Baby, because we did put a lot of time and energy, you know, into a full package, full booklet, full, you know, photos and, you know, artist thing. This isn't like a lot of bands are just, you know, shooting stuff on social media with a little cute picture.
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of old school, 12 or 14 page booklet, all the lyrics, you know, it's kind of old school, like the way it's supposed to be.
Right.
Not, hey, look what we did last week. You know what I mean? So
yeah. The people who have bought the CD have all expressed to me, or the ones who have told me, that they're glad they bought the CD and didn't just, you know, download a song on Spotify.
Yeah.
Because it is a package, and it does work well together, and I think it gives the listener a greater experience to have it in their hands.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's like that old school thing of matching, you know, a visual to an audio. It can take you in different places and different journeys and create different moods and stuff like that, so it's definitely not the old CD in a cardboard container kind of deal.
Yeah, that's cool. All right, so we had Mark Zonder and Gary Wehrkamp. You probably know their names already, but if you don't know about this album, it's called If It's Real. Definitely worth adding to the collection. This is real good stuff. So, guys, thanks for being with me on Progtopia today. And, I hope to hear some more from you both, whether separately or together, real soon.
We really
appreciate
it. Sounds
great, Mark. Thank you for your time.
Yeah, thank you very much.
All right, once again, it is zwband.com is the website where you can find them. And on Facebook, they are also facebook.com/zwband, I should say. And they've got a lot of content up there, a lot of, you know, sort of making of videos from Mark, and just plenty of other content. This is an album I think is really going to stay in my rotation for a while. And it sort of harkens back to that, well, the reason that I got into progressive music in the first place. It doesn't have to be all about time signature changes and fancy chords and, you know, blasting you out with virtuosity. Although these guys do have that when they want to, this is not that kind of a record. This is the kind of record that you need for this kind of a mood. And I think it's exceptional. So, once again, it's Zonder Wehrkamp, ZW Band. You can find them on Facebook. You can find them online on their own website that way. All right, plenty of ways to find them. Please get the album. Get it in physical form if you can. All right, that's going to do it for us for this episode of Progtopia. Once again, please find us online at progtopia.com. Listen to all past episodes there. Follow us on Facebook at Progtopia. Pretty easy to get to. And we will keep you up to date with what we got coming. Next up on the show is going to be someone that we've heard from before, and someone whose name, even if you haven't heard one of our previous shows before, you're going to know who this guy is. So look for that in about a week and a half or so. All right? So thank you all for listening. I'll play you out with a little more Zonder Wehrkamp. We'll see you next time in a land called Progtopia.